This is an iHeart podcast.
Let's talk about the Supreme Court. Let's talk about the JFK files, the assassination. Is the FBI finally doing something decent? All that and so much more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, so let's talk about something good because it is really, really good. Whistleblowers. Remember during the Biden presidency, of course you remember how evil that whole thing was, but there were people inside of the government, oftentimes Democrats, I should point out, but people working inside of the system that looked on in horror at what the system was doing. They were watching their country turn into the Soviet Union, and they spoke up and spoke out. Have you ever in your life spoke up and risked your job, your livelihood, your mortgage payment? And look, maybe you have, maybe you haven't, I don't know, but boy, if you have, that takes friggin' guts. It takes serious guts, and they did it. And when you are a whistleblower who speaks out against the evil of the organization you're in, you not only deserve to be protected, that's the bare minimum, protected, you deserve to be rewarded. That should, heroism should come with rewards. When you commit acts of heroism in the military, they'll hand you a medal. People inside the government, inside of an evil communist system, losing it all to speak out against that system, deserve rewards. And Scott Bessent, who has really, really impressed me, he impresses me every single day now, came out and said something about the IRS whistleblowers. You remember the IRS whistleblowers? Remember, the IRS, because it's evil too, also tried to run cover for Hunter Biden. And we only know this because some brave men stepped forward. Here was Scott.
The culture of being able to come forward when you see wrongdoing is a central part of our democracy. I saw these two fellows before the president addressed to Congress in Speaker Johnson's office. They came over to me and said, you know, sir, we're still being harassed. So I went and decided I would bring them into Treasury, give them a year to investigate the wrongdoing that's going on at the IRS, and then they will go back in. Mr. Shapley will serve as the senior deputy for investigations and enforcement. So we'll have them in Treasury. We'll learn what's been going on at the IRS, what's been wrong, how could this Hunter Biden nonsense have happened, and we're going to make sure it doesn't happen to anyone again.
That's wonderful. And good for Scott Bessent and good for the Trump administration for not only making these two brave people whole, for giving them a reward. And that brings me to another part of this, something I'm not yet willing to declare a problem, but believe me, I'm getting close to declaring it a problem. We didn't just have brave IRS whistleblowers during the Biden administration. The CHECA, the FBI, the evil secret state police agency that can and will destroy your life, we had brave men inside of that agency willing to give up their careers in law enforcement and risk the full wrath of the FBI in order to expose the CHECA to us. You know their names. You've seen them on the show many times. Steve Friend, Garrett O'Boyle, Marcus, Kyle, these guys. You remember these guys?
Mr. Friend, you ever been to a school board meeting?
Yes, I have.
FBI ever sent you to the parking lot of a school board meeting?
Yes, they have.
And in the parking lot of a school board meeting where the FBI sent you, you were taking down information regarding people's license plates.
That's correct.
But the FBI will crush you. This government will crush you and your family if you try to expose the truth about things that they are doing that are wrong. And we are all examples of that.
Where are their rewards? I have all the faith in the world, as of right now, that something will be done. But these men, don't think for a moment that these men have it on easy street, that they've been made whole, they're still suspended, can't earn a living, families in limbo. And I understand that things take time. I totally get it. I am not yet willing to make a stink. But these men are heroes who spoke out on your behalf, on my behalf, under an evil, evil presidency. And they have paid dear prices. All of them have paid dear prices for speaking out. They better get their rewards too, or I'm going to start not being nice about this. I'm going to be patient, and I'm going to have faith, because I don't know Kash Patel, but everyone I do know who knows him says this is a good man who's going to do a good thing. Dan Bongino, I know, is a stud. I have no doubt if he has the power, he'll get these guys done right. I don't know what the holdup is. I don't know. Maybe they're just busy. Maybe they're signing the paperwork as we speak. Maybe this is coming from the AG's office. I don't know what the holdup is, but these FBI whistleblowers had better be made whole, or I'm going to start being extremely impolite about it. There. Just wanted that out there. Now, finally, speaking of impolite, we elected Donald Trump as president, and I'm glad we did. And as we talked about many times before, we have 1,000 battles to fight to save the country. The battle for the presidency is simply one of those battles. It's an important one, but it's one of those battles. And we won that one, and it's good. But electing Donald Trump as president of the United States of America didn't cure the terminal cancer we have as a nation, the cancer of Marxism that has infected every single part of our country. It's in our bones. It bought us some time. So that brings us to the courts and everything we're seeing now. The courts, these lower courts, and just off the top of my head, they've ruled that all the corrupt U.S. aid money has to keep flowing. They've ruled that we have to return rapists and murderers, illegals, back to our shores. They've ruled that we have to keep trannies in the military. The Trump administration is trying to save this country from the evils of communism, and the lower court judges, without the proper authority, are stopping it. And the Trump administration started to speak out, started to talk about impeaching them, and the big cheese on the Supreme Court, John Roberts, came out and said this: for more than two centuries, it has been established that impeachment is not an appropriate response to disagreement concerning a judicial decision. The normal appellate review process exists for that purpose. John Roberts is pointing his lectures in the wrong direction. John Roberts does not seem to understand at all the time we are in. John Roberts needs to bring these lower courts to heel. The Supreme Court needs to hold this back, or we are left with two terrible options, and we must choose a path. If the Supreme Court does not rein in the lower courts, if they choose to not hear this case, or if they even rule against us, then the Trump administration has two choices. They can ignore these courts, which opens up an entirely new can of worms. It's an awful choice to have to make. Or the second choice is we simply allow our country to be taken over by communism, because even electing the person we want as president won't stop said communism. We are in very, very dangerous times right now, unprecedented times. And I don't know how this will work out. But don't you for a second think that everything is cured and all is hunky-dory because Donald Trump's portrait now hangs in the White House. We are in dangerous times. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, you know what reishi is? Probably not, no one does, but that's part of the dream powder that's in Beam's dream powder. I keep telling you it has all these natural things in it. And you know, people don't know what these things are, but what you do need to understand is dream powder is drug-free. Drug-free, it's natural. You have a cup of hot chocolate with all kinds of natural things in it, and that's why not only will it put you to sleep, but when you wake up, you feel good. That's the important part. There are so many things that'll help you sleep. You can get something in the gas station that'll put you to sleep, and then you wake up and you want to die because you're so tired. But all these natural things in dream powder, that's what makes the difference with the waking. You want to sleep like a baby and wake up feeling like you didn't take anything at all? Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. Okay, the JFK files, as promised, we're about to talk about them. But I thought maybe it would be better if you heard it from more of an expert on the subject than me. Larry Hancock joins us now. He's the author of the book, The Oswald Puzzle. Okay, Larry, before we get into the files, what you believe the truth to be and all that. What has been the consensus behind the JFK assassination, which still rattles us to this day?
The consensus has certainly been that it was some form of conspiracy. I think primarily it's leaned towards people associated with the CIA. There are other possibilities, organized crime in some fashion, Lyndon Baines Johnson in some fashion, but it's in recent years it's more centered around the CIA, and in particular their operations group, the group that was working on anti-Castro activities. And that's okay. That's largely because JFK had shut down so many of the anti-Castro activities. He was taking it away from the CIA, giving it to the military. A lot of dissatisfaction within the CIA about JFK, and several of their officers really considered him almost treasonous.
Okay, help me understand that particular leap, because just presented that way on its face, okay, he's shutting down your department at CIA, you may be angry about it, you may go home, get drunk, scream at your wife, crying your Cheerios, but to take the leap to then assassinate the President of the United States of America is quite a leap.
That is a leap, and I think that's why it needs to be qualified. Over time, people have painted with real broad brushes, like, oh, it was the CIA in general, or it was Godfathers and the Mafia in general, and that's a mistake. In the CIA, there was a very particular group of people that things were very personal to. These were CIA officers and the anti-Castro exiles that they had been working with for 3 years from before the Bay of Pigs, people that had been involved with the Bay of Pigs. These are people who have been trying to bring down the Castro regime and kill Castro. And that group included Johnny Roselli, who had contacts with organized crime. But there was a very special group of people who had been risking their lives literally for 3 years to bring down Castro in one way or the other. And in the fall of 1963, the message came down from Washington that JFK was actually beginning covert negotiations with Fidel Castro at his request. And Castro had literally floated the offer that he was fed up with the Russians. They demanded him. He wanted to get rid of them. He was open to discussions of neutrality, accommodation with the U.S. He had reached out to JFK, and by that fall, JFK was taking it seriously enough so that he had detached State Department personnel, and they were ready to go to Cuba for direct talks with Castro. And you can imagine when these people in Miami, who were trained military operatives who have been trying to unseat Castro, they already considered JFK to have been betrayed them at the Bay of Pigs. They considered that he had turned against them with the missile crisis. This is kind of the third strike. So when they hear that everything they've been doing, the people, the friends they've lost, everything is about to go away unless JFK goes away, that was the tipping point. Very personal.
Okay, I'm sure we'll come back to that. Let's talk about the JFK files, because now we have, I think it's 63,000 pages, so it's a friggin' lot, and unless you are a much faster reader than I am, I doubt you've combed through every single document, but I'm sure you've looked at it. What have you seen? Anything that blew your skirt up?
I have looked at it, and I have some friends who are looking at it all night. So basically, what we got to understand is what we've seen so far, which is some 60,000 pages, are almost all re-releases. These are documents that already were at the National Archives. Many of them have been released three or four times. I looked at documents last night that I've seen five versions of before now, and they're simply being re-released with fewer redactions in most cases. There are still some redactions. Some documents are now totally unredacted. So that's good news in a historical sense. It gives us some names that we didn't have, some CIA identities, some sources, good information, and some good historical material, like Schlesinger's advice to JFK to literally take apart the CIA. And JFK was considering that. But it's good historical information, but there's there's certainly no smoking gun in regard to the assassination itself. And as they say, it's almost all re-releases. We may get some new documents from the FBI. They say they found 2,300 documents that they had not associated with the JFK assassination before. We haven't seen those yet. Those will be interesting. But some interesting things for me, for example, having written the Oswald puzzle, there's a lot of speculation that Oswald went to Russia as a CIA asset, that they sponsored him. One of the documents I saw last night was the CIA talking, internal document, talking about how it didn't understand how Oswald had gotten to Russia through Helsinki, how he'd gone there so quickly. They were concerned about how he'd gone to Russia, coming back with a Russian wife. Certainly doesn't sound like they were behind his going or coming. So that sort of information is helpful as well, but that's not about the assassination, that's about Oswald.
Okay, so I guess something has me a little bit confused. It's not that I thought there was going to be some bombshell in this, but for 60 plus years, a bunch of documents have been kept from the American public, and president after president after president, including Donald Trump himself, has talked about releasing them, and then someone's in their ear saying, please don't, and then we finally get them, and it's just not anything that blew me away. So why the secrecy? Why wasn't this out in 1964?
Well, I think that at least maybe we can explain. It would be good to be able to explain something, right? The CIA in particular, not so much the FBI, but the CIA always said it was withholding documents because of names of people, identities of people, names of sources that might, endanger people back then or might certainly hurt their reputations. I looked at a document last night, quite a lengthy document, that listed the names of a whole series of CIA media assets, okay? And that a lot of that had been withheld. Now, is that going to be embarrassing to the families of people who said that they were, totally objective and open journalists to see that they have been taking information from the CIA for years and would be and the CIA had file names for them and considered them assets? That could be embarrassing. I looked at other documents last night that talked about sources, how the CIA was getting information from the British, the Australians, how they were getting domestic information and sharing it with the FBI. Those are all things that certainly at that time could have been embarrassing for individuals, but could have compromised programs. Another thing that we saw was actually names of people in some of the CIA operations, names of people in some of these Cuban operations. We knew about the operations before. We didn't know exactly who was involved. Now we can see who was involved, what their cryptonyms were, really trace their activities. Might that shock some of their relatives? Some of their relatives who might even still be in Cuba? To know, that their relatives had been actively operating. There are also documents that show list of Castro supporters, Cuban intelligence personnel, and we're seeing true names. So to some extent, that is related to individuals and their roles, maybe to living relatives. That's the closest I can see to explain the redactions up to date.
Okay, now let's talk about Lee Harvey Oswald, because you wrote the book on it. Who was this guy? Was he being controlled by somebody? Look, I like you mentioned in the beginning, everyone has a theory. If you asked my old man, may God rest his soul, he swore to the day he died that Lyndon Johnson killed JFK. If you ask me, I'd tell you I think the mob worked with the CIA to kill JFK, but I don't know. I just know what I read. What do you think?
I can tell you more about Oswald. One of the reasons I can tell you more about Oswald is he talked a lot. He did have friends, contrary to what you might be led to believe. He had friends that he talked about politics and international relations with, even in the Marines. He wrote a lot. In 1963, he was writing a lot about what he thought the world should be like. He was very much in favor of economic justice, the availability of medical care, racial justice. So we get a lot of insight into what he said. He was interviewed on TV. He was interviewed on radio. He wrote a lot. So we have good insights with him. And in the book, we offer a very contrarian picture to what you get in the Warren Commission and to some JFK conspiracy. Basically, the first two-thirds of the book is what we consider a solid biography of Oswald as an individual. You know, just set aside speculation. This is his real history. The last third of the book is what we see as a scenario, speculation on our part, but we think pretty solid, of how he was set up by people who engaged with him in New Orleans that summer, anti-Castro exiles who were representing themselves as pro-Castro, and essentially hooked into a situation where he was essentially available to be framed as part of the assassination, pointing to Castro, because the people that carried out the assassination not only wanted to kill JFK, they wanted to point it towards Castro, and for the parties that were directly involved, were told that that would stimulate the U.S. to attack Cuba and eliminate Castro. Later on, I've talked to some people of their families. They felt that they were misled in that part, but that's another story. Oswald's a very unique individual, so we think we can give a perspective that you didn't get in the Warren Commission, who had to paint him as a loner. They had to paint him as asocial, violent, radical, and that's not what you see in the real Oswald. They needed to do that because they could come up with no motive. Everybody they talked to about he and JFK said, yeah, he talked positively about JFK. He said JFK was maybe the only president who could deal with Khrushchev and reach some sort of detente and avoid war. So the Warren Commission was really hard-pressed to present him with any kind of motive, so they essentially had to adjust the picture of him as someone who could be considered a lone nut, which he was neither. He was not lone. He was not a nut. His IQ tested at 118, very bright, and he's one of the best spoken, and actually his Marine officers complained that he could talk geopolitics about as well as they could in the Marines, and this is a Marine officer who graduated in political science from Georgetown.
Okay, so Jack Ruby, I can't let you go without asking about Jack Ruby, because that's always the thing, right? You have this Dallas area strip club owner who most people, I mean, I guess a lot of people don't realize this. At one point in time, he was an enforcer, a leg breaker for Meyer Lansky's Jewish mob. So he had mafia ties, Italian mob, Jewish mob all over the place. He what? Got filled up with patriotic fervor all of a sudden? But where do you explain Jack Ruby to me?
Yeah, I can do that, almost do that for change. Okay, you mentioned Meyer Lansky. Jack Ruby was connected to Lansky, to Lansky's casino activities in Cuba before the Castro Revolution. He actually was a FBI criminal witness in gun running to Cuba. Jack Ruby had a lot of Cuban connections, but the most important was to a fellow named Johnny Roselli. Johnny Roselli was basically a consultant. He was mentored by Lansky. He had gone to Cuba to run Lansky's casinos and straighten up things in Cuba. He was very important because he was trusted by godfathers. He placed money for them. He got talent for them. His business card says strategist. I gotta love that. Roselli had a direct connection based in Cuba to Jack Ruby. And we can paint a pretty concrete trail that actually Roselli was used as a cutout. Roselli was part of this same team that I talked about before, that had been working to first poison Castro, then attack him with rifle teams. He'd been in this same team that had been trying to kill Castro and overthrow his regime for some 3 years with the CIA officers that had been involved. And he was brought into the plot because they were comfortable with him and because they specifically could provide him a deniable connection into Dallas to get a field guy on the ground who knew dirty cops, who knew how to get information inside Dallas about the motorcade route to could support this team in Dallas. And we pretty much have that laid out as to how Roselli served as the cutout using Jack Ruby and how Jack Ruby was brought in as field support to this team that went to Dallas for the assassination.
Totally fascinating. I can't wait to read the book. Thank you so much, sir. It is the Oswald. Go read the book, The Oswald Puzzle. All right. Speaking of all this stuff, the FBI apparently is arresting some criminals and things like that for the first time in quite some time. I guess we should bring that up. We'll talk to the ladies about that in a panel next. Before we talk about that, let me talk to you about your cell phone service. You see, the battle for our culture is far, far from over. We won an election. We won a battle, an important battle. We did not win the war. American corporations are still completely invested against us in the culture war. AT&T, T-Mobile, they hate you. They absolutely hate your guts. Verizon, they hate you. They take your money and they use it against your country. Don't give them your money anymore. Pure Talk never does that. Pure Talk would never do that to you. Pure Talk, the patriotic cell phone company, they share your values. They promote your values. You pay way less. My bill got cut in half. Keep your phone, keep your number, or get a brand new one. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. You know, the FBI just caught its third fugitive on the top 10 most wanted list. Now, that's the third fugitive since January 20th, which, that's so weird. They've knocked out 30% of that list in just a couple months, which, of course, begs the question, what were they doing before? Joining me now, Haley Caronia, I hope I said that right, I hope I didn't butcher it, host of The Nightly Scroll, and Evita Duffy Alonzo, host of The Bongino Report, early edition. Evita, could you help me understand why the FBI couldn't seem to do any of these things the previous 4 years, and it's been like 5 minutes and they've snatched up three of these scumbags already?
Well, they were so busy corralling grandmas who were praying on January 6th that they didn't have time to go after criminals. Listen, the priorities have been completely backward for this entire for the FBI for a very long time. We're finally seeing some reform. Dan Bongino, our former boss, he just got in. He's already cracking skulls. He's already preventing DEI. They were asking questions about whether you were how you gender identify. This is a completely corrupted agency. They were not focused on law enforcement. They were focused on DEI. They were focused on political persecutions. I know for a fact that Dan Bongino, Kash Patel, President Trump, they have their priorities straight.
Yeah, I would just, man, I'd love to be a fly on the wall when they ask my buddy Dan what his preferred pronouns are. Haley, I'm hoping Dan is going to walk into that building and do what we all three know he's going to do, start shaking things up. But what does shaking things up look like?
Well, shaking things up means going after criminals and bad guys, like he's put on his new official X account. You know, today is whatever day it is, and it's President Trump is the president of the United States. And not only that, we have Kash Patel as the FBI director, and Dan, of course, is a deputy director. These are two men, by the way. Kash Patel wrote a book called Government Gangsters. Dan wrote a book called Follow the Money. These are exactly the men I want in charge of getting the bad guys. So Kash Patel recently just put out a badass recruitment video. It is no longer the DEI, FBI. We are now not going after concerned parents at school board meetings. We're not going after pro-life activists who are praying outside of Planned Parenthood. We are finally going after bad guys. Thank goodness.
Evita, Tucker Carlson spoke recently about the cartels, their religion, and since the United States military and the FBI are currently going after these organizations, I thought it would be helpful. Here it was.
MS-13, and there are a couple of different organized criminal gangs in Salvador and throughout Latin America, are religious organizations
yep.
that worship Satan.
Yeah,
this is the indigenous religion, and it's continuing. And you don't want it here, because it's, you know, it's one thing to like take down the Giancanas or whatever. It's much harder to fight a religious cult that has high-tech weapon systems.
Avita, most people have never seen the little shrines they put up to death. They don't know that these guys get all coked out and methed out and have actual religious ceremonies. This got you thinking, though, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And so this is actually, Tucker's referencing Santa Muerte, which is a real cult that is growing in prominence. It has about 12 million followers worldwide. This is not just something that's only followed by the cartels, although it is a demon worshipped by the cartels. They'll create these shrines, and they will put the heads of their enemy cartel victims on these shrines, offering these killings to this demon. There is a spiritual battle going on. And Jesse, I don't think people talk about it very often, but I know that Dan is somebody who's recognized this. Dan is somebody who said, we are in a spiritual battle. And what's really interesting about Santa Muerte is there's some left-wing articles that you can actually read where they talk about how this demon deity that they're worshiping, the Anti-Mary in Latin America, is actually somebody that is a welcoming force for LGBTQ minorities and people who are marginalized by society. The Catholic Church is so oppressive. So Santa Muerte is the great alternative. And that, I think, tells you everything you need to know about them.
Yeah, the cartels are going to be thrilled with all the gay stuff. Haley, speaking of demons, we have a bunch of judges in this country who believe that they believe their role is to protect the communist revolution from the Trump administration, holding it back and stopping it. The question is, where do we go from here? Are we just supposed to sit back for 4 years and allow these communists in black robes to destroy everything the American people voted for?
No, of course not. And I think if we've seen the events of the last week, Borders are Tom Homan doesn't really care what these activist judges think or what they say. The Trump administration is going to act. I keep calling this the get-ish done administration because they keep getting ish done. It is like their job, which it is. They work for the American people. This is what the American people voted for. You talked about these demonic cartels. This is the battle right now. Demonic cartels and cults, you know what they do? They sacrifice women and children. That's exactly what these cartels are doing. Everyone talks about the fentanyl crisis in this country, which is horrific, but little do people know and talk about that the human trafficking that is occurring. Cartels make tens of billions of dollars smuggling women and children across the border, and that's thanks to Biden's open border. So if Tom Homan, the border czar, can put an end to it, thank goodness.
Speaking of Joe Biden, we had a couple astronauts return from space yesterday. It was a wonderful little scene out of the movies. Even the dolphins showed up for the whole affair, and it was lovely, but one couldn't help to wonder, why exactly were these astronauts up there for so long? Why wouldn't Joe Biden just go get them? That's a pretty easy political win, Evita.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question. This is something that Elon Musk actually brought up. Why not bring them home right away? And the problem is they didn't want to have SpaceX, which is owned by Elon Musk, right, co-founded by Elon Musk, to bring these astronauts home because he was politically aligned with President Trump. So it was completely, apparently, for political reasons. And if you imagine yourself being stuck in space for 9 months, I mean, this takes a physical toll on their, like a massive physical toll on their bodies. I mean, bone atrophy, muscle atrophy and your bone density lost. And there's also a spiritual component to this too, in that you're separated from Earth. Humans are meant to be on Earth. To be up in space for that long takes a profound toll on the human psyche. And so I think they were tortured for 9 months. They were tortured up there for 9 months, and they were not allowed to come back for political reasons. And that, to me, is one of the most egregious legacies of this Biden administration. These are human beings, and that we would leave them up there for political purposes is disgusting.
That is. Speaking of torture, Don Lemon apparently has a new show, and on this show he says all the same stupid things he used to say on CNN. Here he was, Haley.
People love AOC. People love Jasmine Crockett. People love Eric Swalwell. and the like. And I think that the Democratic Party should put the people out there who the people want. They should put the politicians out there who the people want, who they're asking for.
Please do.
Haley, I totally agree. Please, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, if the Democrat Party wants to put up AOC, who's unfortunately old enough to run for president in 2028, and the Jasmine Crockett of the world, who is best known for her, you know, takedowns and her fiery bleach blonde bad built butch body attack on Marjorie Taylor Greene, if this is the future of the Democrat Party, then by all means keep going. They're polling at astronomically low levels. Even CNN reported the approval rating among Democrats is at a 29% right now. That's the lowest that CNN has reported in 30 years. So if this is what they want to keep doing and they want to double down on this, and, you know, if AOC and Jasmine Crockett are the next Kamala Harris's of the world, run them. I dare you.
No doubt. Ladies, appreciate you as always. Come back. All right. We're not done yet. Lighten the mood. Next. Okay, it's time for Daddy Jesse to step in and have a frank conversation with you before I bring Susan in here. Gavin Newsom. I know this is not exactly breaking news, but that guy is going to run for president in 2028. He's one of these people that's just ambitions just dripping out of him and that greased up head of his. He's a horrific human being who has destroyed maybe my favorite state. I just adore California. I know everybody dumps on it, but California's paradise. He has a new podcast out where he's routinely inviting people on the right onto his show, and they keep accepting these invitations when he's obviously trying to moderate himself and appear to be the very reasonable guy instead of the complete scumbag that he actually is. This is all very transparent, and anyone with an IQ above a gerbil can see it, but apparently I had to come on here and say it. Joining me now, Susan Crabtree, author of the book Fool's Gold, California Dream, and Now Threaten Us All. Okay, Susan, first of all, let's discuss Gavin Newsom. For some reason, people buy into this garbage sometimes, and it drives me crazy.
It absolutely drives me crazy. Absolutely drives me crazy too. Everything about Gavin Newsom is performative. It's not performance-based. From his college admission that he lied about, it was based on his baseball prowess, to the launch of his wine business with Getty Oil money, even though he cries climate change every time he gets a chance to his political rise that was bolstered by Willie Brown and his dad's ties to him. All were handed to him on a silver platter. So that's why he thinks he can run for president via podcast while his state's just in shambles. And we go into this in the book. We talk about, you know, his CCP ties, how he let all these prisoners out under false pretenses during COVID, thousands. Basically, he is directly responsible for all of the state's failures, and they've only accelerated during his time in office.
Susan, how did he get there? California, yeah, it's blue and you have to be a Democrat, but there are many Democrats who run for these seats and tear each other apart trying to rise to be governor of the most powerful state in the union. Said, how did this sleazeball get there?
He was anointed. He was anointed by Willie Brown and the power class in San Francisco. That's where all of the state's top leaders come from. Nancy Pelosi was his aunt, and his dad actually helped William Newsom, helped Pat Brown, so Jerry Brown's father. They're very tight in with the Browns from their time at St. Ignatius High School. It's a private Jesuit school in San Francisco. All the connections stem from there, and then the moneyed class and some bloodlines too. So it's really, you know, they basically took turns. He actually tried to challenge Jerry Brown at one point and got smacked down by the power class there, and he waited his time, bided his time as lieutenant governor until he was allowed to, you know, run for mayor first to San Francisco, then he became lieutenant governor, then he became governor, and it's an anointment in California.
Susan, how did he do what he did to California so quickly? It's not easy to wreck a state that's that powerful, but I'll tell you, I have to go back there once a year or so for various business things. You can see it gets worse every time. It's just slowly going down and down and down. What did he do?
So a native Californian, and I went to Washington, D.C. after college. I spent 23 years in D.C. I came back in 2017. And that was right when he was coming into power in 2018. The state had its problems, certainly under Jerry Brown. He was soft on crime. Certainly the crime spree was happening already, starting, brewing there, and the homelessness was a problem. But it all accelerated because Gavin Newsom, like I said, he does not earn what he gets. He is not used to having to perform. So he just, you know, pretends, and he even talks about this during his Charlie Kirk podcast, where he says, talks about it, the mask you live in, and then you have this mask on that somebody puts on you, and then you fill in the mask to live up to their expectations. It's kind of a creepy concept if you really examine it, and it's actually the name of one of his wife's gender justice documentary, so it's not like he came up with that all by himself. It accelerated during COVID. He wrote a book about trying to make, and when he was lieutenant governor, because he was bored, he talks about how bored he was as lieutenant governor for 8 years, that said he was promising to make government more transparent and get it digitized, but it all fell apart when he became governor, and they couldn't even get the unemployment payments out the door, and there was so much fraud. It was $30 billion in fraud, the biggest, largest amount of fraud in the state's history, all under his watch. And there were people, he locked down the state. He was pushing people out of work, except for, of course, Hollywood carve-outs. But he couldn't even get those people that he was pushing out of work the unemployment checks they deserved. I mean, this is just one of the many things we go into. You know, we really examine, because I work with Peter Schweitzer's group, the top research director is my co-author, Jed McFadder, and we delve into his ties to the CCP in China. And it's really startling what he did with that, and why he did that was to get his own wine trademarked and pushed into China. And it was a personal self-dealing. Gavin Newsom knows no bounds, because the California media do not hold him into account. We couldn't fit all of the corruption and self-dealing and bad policies into one book. It was hard to fit it all because we found so many things that hadn't been reported yet in the California media.
Did he fund a bronze statue of himself? Because I've thought about doing that for me.
Don't we all want a bronze statue of ourselves somewhere, a monument to me? Basically, if somebody else makes a bronze statue of you or carves you into Mount Rushmore, you know, that's an honorable situation. But if you pay for it yourself is what we found. So there he has a bronze statue of himself in San Francisco City Hall. They scrubbed all the pictures after it came out last week because we uncovered it in the book. And he paid for it. We found that he paid for it with two of his own companies, partially. One was his Plump Jack Winery, and then another was a restaurant that he owned. And it was all in the form of behested payments. And behested payments in California is like a pay-to-play scheme. It is, politicians are allowed to direct corporations to give to their pet charity of choice. And in this case, Gavin Newsom directed his own companies to give to his pet charity, which was the paying for the monument to himself.
Susan, thank you so much. Come back soon. That was wonderful. All right. We'll be back. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And to lighten the mood, I just want to speak out. I just want to take a minute tonight on a heavier topic, instead of lightening it, discrimination. It's ugly, isn't it? You've seen it throughout history. You still see it today. And most people don't speak out on behalf of those who are discriminated against, but I do. And so I'm going to speak out on behalf of the most discriminated against minority in the United States of America today. And that is those of us who prefer sauces dips with our food. When we go out to eat, we ask for a side of ranch, extra side of ketchup. Can I get some barbecue sauce with that? I just went out to dinner. Actually, just went out to dinner with producer Matt, who's in my ear right now. Me, Matt, bunch of dudes, we went out to dinner. I ordered a beer cheese cheeseburger. It was on the menu. I asked for an extra side of beer cheese. The waiter watched him do it, wrote it down. Beer cheeseburger, extra side of beer cheese. Simple request, right? Did I get my beer cheese with my meal? Oh, gosh, no, no. Those of us sauce people, we know you never, ever, 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 ever get it with the meal. That's a guarantee. You usually have to ask. You ask. Most of the time, you will then wait 15, 20 minutes as if it's the most unimportant thing in the world while your food gets cold before your sauce gets there. This particular night, this is what pushed me over the edge. This particular night, I never saw it at all. And it was probably an hour after we got our food. From the time we got our food to the time we walked out of the restaurant, an hour. I sat there, no beer cheese. I don't know why. I don't know what we've done to restaurant people that we have been so oppressed, so degraded. But I want you to know, I'm here to defend you, and I will do so. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.